Welcome to another NS Brief. I'm your host, Saul Mora. On today's brief, we talk to Justin Miller about Mapbox. Hey there, everyone. Thanks again for joining me for another NS Brief. So if you remember a couple of episodes ago when I posted the show with Laurent Cincinnati, who created RubyMotion, I mentioned that I was going to do a follow-up interview with a lot of, post-release, post-launch questions. Now, I decided that I wanted to do something more interactive and maybe give more people an opportunity to talk to him. So what I instead did was contact Scotty from iDeveloper Live, and we basically arranged for me to join them on a interview of Laurent on iDeveloper Live. So we did that the other day, and the episode has been posted, and it was quite fun, and actually I went and listened to it again, and it was quite informative even the second time through. So it was great to be able to have the opportunity to talk to Laurent again and ask him some of the questions that maybe Cocoa developers want to know more than maybe the Ruby developers, and not to say that, well, there's obviously a difference in the way that both developers work. And I think if you're a Cocoa developer now and you're used to Xcode and all that stuff, all the tool set, the things that basically that I'm used to as well, I ask him a lot of the questions that you might have. So hopefully we covered all the advanced things of, you know, why would anybody from the Cocoa side of things or the Xcode side of things dig into RubyMotion. So check out that episode. It's on the iDeveloper Live podcast feed. It's episode 53, and it was a lot of fun with Scotty and me and John Fox. Well, half the time with John Fox and Laurent Cincinnati. So definitely check that one out. That one is my follow-up episode to Laurent Cincinnati, creator of RubyMotion. So before we get started with the rest of the show, I'd like to take a moment to thank our show sponsor, and that is CocoaConf. By now you know that we've only got a couple of weeks until we get to DubDub, and many of you, I'm sure, did not get a ticket to DubDub. But fear not, if you need the information that you want, you know, for your apps and to help learn Cocoa and to interact with your peers, definitely CocoaConf is one of the better technical conferences out there. It's got a lot of great, highly technical sessions. There is no fluff at this conference. It's all tech all the time. Everybody is going to be talking code and frameworks and Cocoa and everything that you need to get your app out the door and shipped well. And there's a lot of great sessions available at CocoaConf, and a lot of great presenters as well. People like Bill Dudney and Chris Adamson, just to name a few, who were also guests on this show. Meet them in person, ask them questions about the topics that they know about. In those two, they've got Core Audio and Core Graphics. I'll also be giving a session or two, a couple of sessions, and you can just check out the schedule. It's on CocoaConf.com. The conference is June 28th through the 30th. You can also sign up for the pre-conference iOS training. So if you're very new to iOS development, you can check out the pre-conference training and get up to speed, and then you can follow along with the rest of the conference. Tickets are fairly cheap, only $600, and if you need a discount, some motivation, head on over and enter in our discount code for the show, and it's brief, and you can get $100 off of your ticket price. So definitely check out CocoaConf, and I hope to see you there, and thanks again to CocoaConf for supporting NS Brief and the Mac iOS indie developer community. So today I've got with me Justin Miller from Development Seed. Thanks for joining me, Justin.
Glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and what you've been up to for the past couple of years, I guess.
Yeah, I work at Development Seed, and kind of our main project right now is called Mapbox. So that's what a lot of people think I work for, is a company called Mapbox. But Development Seed was kind of a contracting consulting company, and now we work on products and services and stuff around mapping on the web and on iOS, which is where I come in. And so I've been working on that for a couple of years now. And been doing Cocoa for about 8 years, I guess. I started around 10.2. And started working on apps of my own a couple of years after that. And I did freelancing for close to 5 years, mostly iOS. So, but the map stuff is kind of new for me, and it's been really interesting, and I've been doing a lot of cool stuff lately.
So one of the things that is interesting about you is that you were working for yourself for quite a long time, and you recently made the move to full-time employment with Development Seed. How has that kind of that transition going from indie to employed been for you?
It's good. It's great. It really kind of surprised me, because once I went indie and kind of got things going, I did that in 06, late 06. And once I got going, I thought I'd never go back to working for somebody else. I just really liked, being on my own, and mostly I did, hourly billing type contracting work. I started freelancing with Development Seed, who I'd known for 6 or 7 years. I guess coming on about 2 years ago, 2 summers ago, and from there the project just got increasingly cooler, and I started full time with them a little over a year ago, and it's been awesome. I work remotely. Most of the company is based in Washington D.C. and I'm in Portland, Oregon. There's about 5 or 6 of us who all work individually in different places around the world, outside of the main office. So from that point of view, it's still the same, like I'm working at home, my own office, that kind of thing. And the team structure at Mapbox Development Seed is really cool, and you're really able to kind of own an area and really go to town on it. So I've really enjoyed that, and being able to take a lot of initiative that way. So it's really been a smooth transition, and I really enjoy the team and respect the team and the stuff they're doing. And it was actually a lot easier than I thought it'd be to go back from working entirely, you know, being my own boss, to working with the team again, but I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah. So is it that, your new, company and environment is, it's, still kind of an indie shop. I mean, it's not like you went to work for, went to work for any larger corporation with, stock on the stock market and things like that. Right.
Yeah. It's a really small team. It's really kind of a flat organization. So, we're much more about, you know, we all kind of jump in and do whatever needs to get done, and then we all kind of come forward in various areas where we're better. Like, design guys will really come forward and say, you know, what if we did it like this? And gradually design takes shape, and guys are more code-oriented will jump in and bring things in that direction. So, yeah, it's a really kind of a loose, really fast, iterative environment that I really like, and it's not kind of your traditional structure and where you're segmented from what's going on in the company. All the stuff's kind of out in the open. So I think it helps things move along really fast. And the Mapbox stuff in particular is like a bootstrap project. Like I said, Development Seed was doing consulting type work in DC, mostly in international development. And then the Mapbox stuff started out of kind of like eating our own dog food. We were making these tools to make clients' maps, and then we started turning it into a products and services. And the stuff is just been bootstrapped, and we iterate on it and constantly going to town on it and making it better. So it's really kind of exciting and non-traditional, but really yeah,
so that's really interesting that, so we're here to talk about Mapbox and a lot of the products that surround it, but it's actually really interesting to see that it's really a product that spawned out of a lot of consulting work.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, how did you guys realize that it was something that you could extract? I mean, did you just... You said you were eating your own dog food, but did you kind of, I think you didn't start out thinking that that would be a product, but I mean, how did you kind of recognize that?
So some of that predates me a little bit, because as I was coming in, like 2 years ago is when a lot of this stuff was transitioning, and that's when I just started freelancing. I wasn't there for some of the early client work with maps, but we just started building tools internally to make custom map tiles or maps that fit a very specific site aesthetic, because we were really design focused with just making a map look, you know, we didn't just want to put a Google map in there that always had the same colors and the same look and the same logo on it in the midst of a site that had a very specific aesthetic. And so that's where the need kind of came from. we wanted to make maps that didn't have roads or didn't have land masses or water was a certain color or were really sparse or really dense because it was urban related or something like that. And that's where the kind of the drive for the stuff came from, and just started building tools internally to make these. And from there, started putting all that stuff out as open source. Pretty much all the tools and stack that we build are open source on GitHub. And so people started taking interest in that and saying, well, you know, what if you guys hosted maps or did this with your tools, and it kind of shaped the direction of where we headed with things and started to turn into a service business, product and service business, a hosted service.
Right. So then you really have, I guess, anything to sell related to maps. It's all basically given out as open source.
Well, yeah, the only real revenue portion of the company is cloud services hosting of maps. So, for example, like the tools we put out for building your own maps, if you want to go all the way down to the styling streets and that kind of thing, is an app called Tomil. That's all open source and free. And we pre-build binaries and that kind of thing. So if you want to just go grab it, you can. And then the server software that we use is written in Node.js, and that's out there for free. And then the iOS SDK that I work on is out there and available. But if you want high availability maps hosted to embed in a website or to be available for a mobile app, say, that's where you'd come to us and pay on a monthly basis. We have free plans, but it goes all the way up to enterprise, you know, like newspapers hosting maps for their online version, stuff like that.
So have we seen some of this Mapbox work in the wild, in any apps or websites in particular?
Yeah, so the app stuff is still pretty new. There's not a whole lot of apps using it, but on the website side, you've probably seen it in a bunch of different places, like Slate Magazine, Chicago Tribune has used it, NPR, White House, a lot of federal agencies have used it. And then most recently, in the early part of this year, Foursquare switched away from Google Maps, and they now use our hosted maps for their online stuff.
Well, that's interesting. Is there any reason that they switched in particular?
There's a couple different factors that all kind of came to play in this year. I mean, part of it was a design aesthetic, and part of it is kind of an investment in the spirit of open source. This stuff is all, the worldwide maps that we put out are based on OpenStreetMap, which is kind of like Wikipedia for maps. And so it's kind of an investment in like a commons around building up this geo data set that's publicly available as opposed to a proprietary version. And then the big factor that came into play this year is Google started charging their high-end customers for map use at kind of a high rate.
Was that include Apple then?
I don't know the specifics of, I bet you it's a really interesting relationship between them and Apple right now. I mean, like the kind of things we were hearing about is like real estate companies who did a lot of listings in big metro areas were suddenly going from like not paying anything to being saddled with a six-figure bill annually to put Google Maps in their website. And they're like, oh, okay. Well, if I'm going to pay, maybe I should do some due diligence and look around and see what other people are doing in this space. And so that was a big factor in kind of some of the popularity we've had recently. But the Apple thing, yeah, it's interesting. They pretty famously, a couple months ago when they were showing off iPhoto for iOS, they kind of, people saw that they were using some interesting looking brownish maps in their app, and a lot of people started doing digging and eventually located where they're being served from, which was inside of Apple, and determined that they're coming out of OpenStreetMap as well, even though Apple didn't really say that. And so I'm really curious to see what unfolds in the next year with Apple.
Recently they attributed some of their maps to OpenStreetMaps in the latest release.
Yeah, they did a 1.0.1 release, and they just kind of put that in the credits section, got some data copyright OpenStreetMap, so it's pretty much a open and shut case that they are doing that. So it kind of makes me wonder if they're building up a whole worldwide level, and you know, if they're going to switch. There's a lot of rumor going around. Obviously, with Apple, you don't get a lot of concrete information on this kind
right
of stuff.
So Apple also recently bought like a mapping data provider, didn't they?
Yeah, they've bought up I think three companies in the last 3 or 4 years related to map and geo stuff. And the stuff we've seen kind of move in the space Last year with iOS 5, the main thing they kind of launched was their own geocoder. And for anybody who's not familiar with it, a geocoder is where you can take an address and get it changed into a latitude and longitude so you can put it on a map. Or you can go the other direction and say, here's a point maybe where the user is. Can you give me a street address for this? And they came up with their own, which is cool because they added both directions, which they didn't have before. And then they got off of Google, which got rid of this requirement that whatever you geocode, you have to put on a Google map. So now you can use it right in your app and just, you know, even if you don't have a map, you could say you are close to 123, you know, Fifth Avenue. So that's one of the things they've been working on. They also did that multilingually, which is kind of cool. But, you know, the rest is kind of conjecture at this point. There's rumors they're working on vector maps where all the maps are rendered on the client. You know, using Core Graphics or something like that. There's rumors that they're doing this idea called napkin maps, which is like if you imagine when you give directions to somebody on, say, the back of a napkin, you draw the main roads and the main cross intersections, but you don't fill in buildings and every cross street and you don't label everything. It's really kind of concrete. It's oriented in the direction they're going to go. I think Apple had a patent around that kind of concept, so they may be doing something like that in iOS. I don't know. There's a lot of different things they could be doing. I hope we see some of it this summer.
Yeah, we've only got a little bit of more time to dub. Hopefully, yeah. This will be released before that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so let's get into, I guess, the Mapbox stuff as it relates to iOS. I mean, why would we need... So Mapbox provides an iOS SDK that we can all use as an alternative to MapKit, right?
Yeah, we have an open source SDK that you can put in. It's not a straight drop-in for MapKit framework, but it behaves really similarly. It's got map views, and then if you want to put points on it, you add annotation data objects that then get queried on the delegate for the views or the layers when they're needed to kind of optimize performance there. We base it on some projects that were already out there on GitHub, and we forked them and kind of made them our own, and I've been working mostly the last couple months on that. That's been my main focus. So you can display maps in it and then put points on the map. And
yeah, so how is it different than MapKit if it's, you know, it sounds like it's doing a lot of the same kinds of things that I would do otherwise.
So the main reason I got involved with the development seed in the first place was to try to bring custom maps that weren't Google Map tiles onto iOS. Which we ended up doing, and then that eventually turned into this SDK. And so one of the main reasons might be you don't want to use Google for personal or legal reasons. Like you just, you know, you're implicitly bound to their terms of service by using their framework.
By using Apple's framework, which...
Using Apple's framework.
Right.
There's a bunch of legalese that goes with it. One of those things you never read. It's just by, you know, sourcing the framework. But maybe you want to put custom maps that have a certain aesthetic. You know, you've got kind of the three types with MapKit. You've got your regular street view, your satellite view, and your hybrid, which is kind of like a satellite with some of the streets labeled. But other than that, like say you want a, you know, a purple map, or you want a black nighttime looking map, or a night vision spy looking map, that kind of thing. You can't do any of that stuff. You can't modify them on the fly. You can't do anything except put like kind of geographic overlays over top of the map. So there's nothing that really changes the style or removes the logo or anything like that. And important for a lot of developers is you can't take any of those offline, at least not reliably. Like you've probably seen when you look up directions to a place, and you've got the map on your app, say a Maps app, and then you go offline or you're in a tunnel or something like that and you need to check on the directions. Maybe the tiles will be there, but then all of a sudden they might just all try to reload and disappear. The same as like Safari web pages when you're offline. It's not really reliable. Whereas our SDK lets you go completely offline if you want, either, you know, out of caching. We don't really have limits on what you can cache on the client side. Or you can, I've worked on a lot of technology based on SQLite where all the map tiles are stuffed into a SQLite database. And so you could preload a geographic area or something like that and then load it up without the user ever needing an internet connection in the first place. So. That's kind of the main differentiators. If you want different maps, if you want to combine layers together, and if you want offline and custom caching behavior, being that it's open source, you can kind of go whatever direction you want with that stuff.
Right. So, do Do all the big maps that you have in there, do they increase your application size significantly enough to kind of, touch that 20 megabyte boundary?
They can, yeah. It depends kind of how much area you want to ship. Like if you're setting off up front to ship a large area in the app, it's probably going to be pretty large. Like Mapbox for iPad, which is kind of like a Swiss Army knife app that I work on, that is kind of a showcase of our technology, ships at about 200 megs. But it also has the whole world down to, it's called Zoom Level 9. There's this concept of like how far you zoom in on the map. And that's kind of like, it maybe shows a country or two at a time. That's about how close you can get. Whereas something like looking at a street level might be level 16 or 17. So, yeah, if you want to ship the whole world in an app, it can get large. If you're just doing a metro area, you may be able to squeeze that in under 20 megs. Although I think their limit's 50 megs nowadays. They raised it recently.
Yeah.
Once they went with the Retina iPad. I imagine that bumped stuff up a little bit.
Yeah, but still not enough for the 200 megs iPad app like that.
Yeah, it really kind of depends on what you want to do. The way maps work, this idea of zoom levels is... If you want to look at the like, say you have the whole planet in view at once in an iPhone app, that's generally one tile, which is kind of zoom level 0. And then each zoom level you go in past that, you have exponentially more tiles. So that down at something like zoom level 9, which is the highest one that our app ships with, each side of the map is 512 tiles for about 250,000 or so tiles. So obviously, you're only scrolling around and seeing part of that at once. But if you want to ship all those offline, you've got those 250,000 generally PNG images, plus all the other previous zoom levels all stuffed into your app. And there's tricks you can do. Some of the stuff we work on in particular with our hosted service and our Map Studio are deduping, because you imagine a lot of the ocean tiles look the same. They're just a lot of blue tiles. And, same thing with like Sahara Desert. It's a lot of sandy looking tiles. So there's tricks you can do to cut that stuff down, and then you can gzip compress and all kinds of other stuff. So
yeah,
that's something we're always working on.
So are those tiles like actual satellite imagery, or is it mostly, or is it just different? I mean, you just have different tiles with different types of images and stuff.
It really depends on the map. We're not really doing satellite imagery yet, but so we're doing kind of the drawn look that you might be familiar with from something like Google Maps. So it's got, curvy streets and maybe green areas and parks and school icons and churches and government buildings and that kind of thing labeled.
So are those labels built into the tiles? It's because it really feels like on Google Maps for iOS, it's, I can't tap on those things and get information like I would maybe on Google Maps on the web.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It depends on the tile set. That's one of those things you might want to customize. So if you want, like... Personally, I feel like Google Maps these days are getting kind of cluttered. You've got like well-known restaurants and all this kind of stuff jammed in there. And like you said, you can't tap on it. But number two, you can't get that out of there. You can't, it's baked into the tiles. So it kind of depends on the set that you want to make. Maybe you just want streets and green spaces. And then in the app, you want to dynamically show, you want to let a user filter for coffee shops or bars or something like that. And then put the icons in over top, client side. You kind of get that flexibility that way, as opposed to shipping it all with it all in the tiles, and then you can't really do anything with it other than edit the image or try to draw on top of it.
So does Mapbox also handle routing and directions? I mean, that's one of the big things that I use all the time in just the iOS maps. It's just the routing is just priceless.
Yeah, we're not doing anything in that area yet, where you can like say, how do I get from point A to point B, and then maybe draw that on a map. That said, I don't think you have that in MapKit either.
I think people that as I understand it, they use something else, but I don't know what it is. I mean, my thought was that they use some kind of Google API or something to get directions and then get a path that they can then draw as a overlay on top of it.
Yeah, I think that's generally how it works. I don't know if Google's API is public, but I'm sure there's, untold competitors anyway doing that, if not. That would be kind of how it would work. You would put in two points, and you would get back a report of a path, and then with something like MapKit or our SDK, you could add that path as an annotation, and then each piece of it that needs to be drawn when it's on the view, you know, on screen will be drawn, so you don't have the overhead of a giant, complex, jaggy path being drawn up front. But yeah, that'd be my understanding of how it would work. Honestly, we haven't done a lot with it. We've been mostly focused on the cartography side of things, so the look of the maps and the layers, and then technology around stacking those layers or putting icons on them or that kind of thing, as opposed to the navigation side of things, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah, so you're mentioning layers. Does that mean, like we just mentioned, like all these, I guess, points of interest on a map, you know, restaurants, coffee shops, lakes, or whatever? Would that be like a separate layer that maybe you could reuse amongst several different styles of maps, mapping tiles?
Yeah, for sure. So when you do layers, you can have multiple layers that are each made up of their own tiles that load independently. And one of the things we do on our hosting service, this is kind of one of those areas that we charge for, is we do server-side compositing of that, which is really good for mobile. So if you have, like, say you want to use our worldwide layer that's called Mapbox Streets, which is just like a worldwide view down to the street level, but then you want to shade in counties in a certain color, or, you know, you're doing a demographic map or something like that, or like you said, you want to do points that you don't want to necessarily plot client-side, you have this reusable transparent layer that's just got lots of icons on it. You can mix and match that with whatever layer you want to stack it on top of in our web UI, and then that's served out to the client as one tile. It's composited server-side, and so you're not downloading multiple tiles and compositing them yourself on the client, say with Core Graphics. So yeah, it really lets you reuse and kind of change out styles. So you could have, you know, a daytime, like an example might be a daytime and a nighttime mode for your app, where during the daytime you've got the day looking bright colored map and you're showing coffee shops or something like that, and then the nighttime you swap over to like a black map that's really dark and shows bars or something like that. Yeah, so you got a lot of flexibility in mixing and matching that stuff. I do some stuff with compositing on the client side as well, if you want to do that, like if you're pulling in MapQuest or some other provider, and then your own stuff that's local or from another server or something, you want to composite on the client side. I've got libraries for that in the SDK too. So, yeah, you can do the whole transparency thing and stack layers, which is pretty cool. And that's something you can't do with MapKit either. So that's where we originally kind of started off with doing demographic maps, where we want to show these contour lines and regions on a map. And it's really kind of tricky to do because you have to draw it all client side with MapKit.
So one of the things that, this is kind of out of random curiosity. I've not seen this in any map whatsoever, but I'm just curious. Do you think a layer would be able to support animations? Like if you wanted to have a big giant animating arrow going to a particular thing rather than a pin? I'm not sure what the usefulness of that is, uh-huh. But you know, you can, if you have layers, I imagine you can animate some of those layers for certain effects or something.
Yeah, you could. It wouldn't really be at the tile level, because the way the map engine works, and presumably the way MapKit works too, is through CA tiled layer, which is a subclass of CA layer. And so you take your view that's scrolling around in your scroll view, and you make it a CA tiled layer, and then that does the job of calling draw rect and tells you which tiles to send, basically. And so you just draw tiles back. You draw tiles into a context and send them. So you're doing static drawing at that point, and it's probably not efficient. You don't know how frequently that draw rect routine is going to be called to the point where you could do any kind of animation with it. But on top of that, like on iOS client side, you can do any kind of polygon or point that you put down is a CA layer subclass. And so you could put whatever you want in there that had like a CA transaction animation on it or something like that.
Right.
I've made points that kind of flash in and out opacity wise, but you could have an arrow, you know, kind of moving, kind of jiggling, saying eat at Joe's or whatever, if you're trying to highlight a restaurant.
Well, so, I mean, one of the things I could just kind of think off the top of my head, if you had like a geography quiz kind of app and it's like, well, outline, you know, it outlines the states and it tells you, you know, you, once you tap on a state or something, it kind of does a nice little animation around it. I mean, that'd be a really simple thing that maybe actually have a use.
Yeah, for sure. That kind of reminds me of another aspect of our SDK I didn't really mention, which is interactivity. Which is kind of a cool thing. If you want to touch a state or a country or something like that, you need to know the bounds, you know, of that very complex polygon. And one way you could do that is to draw it client side and then add a touch handler or something like that. But it can get really hairy, especially if you have a lot of spaces, you know, a lot of polygons to outline. And so one thing we do in our stack is have interactivity. So if you're building your own map, you can embed data in there. Like if you have a shape file, which is kind of a standard file format for working with geodata, it's a vector format. So it's got a bunch of polygons in it. Maybe it's got the border lines of every state in the U.S. With their name. And you could put that into our TileMill app and render that out into a map so that you draw all those state borders in a certain color. But you could also make interactivity so that when the state is touched, you get a return value of the state name. And you can use, you know, there's a delegate callback for that in our SDK. So you could have a country map or a state map where you identify what polygon the user's touching on, but that's done really efficiently because it's not drawn on the client side as vector polygons. It's embedded in the map itself through some pretty interesting stuff. We do a bunch of UTF-8 encoding and zlib deflating to compress all this stuff in. Really pretty cool stuff.
That sounds complicated.
it is to kind of get into the guts of it, but right. Usability-wise, it's pretty neat because you just get a delegate callback that says, like, user tapped such and such area in, you know, with this CG point, and you can do a quick query and get the string back for a certain, or whatever it is, PNG image back for a certain area. You can embed all that kind of stuff in there.
Cool. So can you get, like, the path of, like, a country or a state or something, like the outline of it? I mean, is that provided in the Mapbox SDK?
Like to get it returned back to you at a point?
Right. So if I wanted like, you know, a CG path that basically was the outline of a state, for example, could I get that at all? Or is that not part of the API?
Yeah, not really part of the API. I mean, that could go into the map tiles so that you style that path in the tiles, you know, baked into the images, and then could get, you know, when they've touched inside or outside of that path. But if you want to do that stuff client side, you'd probably want to go straight at the source data, like a shape file that has that information, or maybe GeoJSON, which is basically just a light set of standards on a JSON structure that has an array of points, and then you would iterate through and create a CG path out of that.
Cool. So another thing, and so if I wanted to, I grabbed my location from core location, and I wanted to plot it on the map. I mean, I'm sure it already gives you the thing, the little blue dot that I am here kind of thing. Is there a way to kind of geocode, or I guess reverse geocode that, and kind of determine where you are in a human readable sense?
Yeah, that. So we actually do have that. That location bit with the blue dot and a little halo around it and everything, which I actually had to kind of reverse engineer how MapKit and MapSap did that.
Because you had to make it look exactly the same, right?
Yep, and you've got the little pulsing halo on it,
right.
And that all had to be done in CA layers. So,
yep, does it have like the scope when it's trying to narrow down the accuracy?
Yeah, it does. And it does the compass too, so
oh,
you
man.
Get the little viewpoint and the map rotates, and yeah, that was a good time.
Sure.
But yeah, so the easiest way to go ahead and do that kind of stuff would be with Apple's geocoder. So in iOS 5, they moved it from MapKit, I think it was called MK Geocoder, over to core location. It's CL Geocoder, I think. And that is forward and reverse, so you could go either way. So if you query the API and it says they're at latitude, you know, XY, you can feed that to a CL geocoder object, and when it returns back, it'll tell you that's such and such address, and you can put that on a pin, or you could save that, you know, you can bookmark it, or whatever you want to do with it. And yeah, the neat thing is Apple taking that in-house, they allowed you to do that on whatever you want. It doesn't even have to be displayed on a map, so it's pretty handy.
So could I do that offline as well, though?
The geocoder stuff, no, you'd need like a point database on device for that sort of thing, because that's a pure network service.
Right. Do you have one of those built into your SDK, or do I have to get that through a third party?
Yeah, third party at this point. That's something we're looking into too, but I mean, there's just massive databases, and it depends on what kind of uses, you know, whether it's commercial type of stuff or governmental boundaries or all kinds of things. There's a lot of data there, but a lot of third-party services specialize in that.
Cool. So you were talking earlier about all the tool set, and one of the cooler ones that I just saw on your website is called TileMill, and we mentioned that a little earlier. You want to talk about that one a little bit?
Yeah. So Tomil is the app that we make. It's a desktop app, although it's written in Node.js, so it's server-side JavaScript, so it runs as kind of like a client-server on your machine.
So is this like a browser? I mean, it looks really cool.
Yeah, essentially is. Like, I work on the Mac port of it, and it's essentially WebKit housing a web-based application locally. But we put a lot of attention to detailing to make it not feel like a web app. So you can download it and run it. And we do Sparkle integration for updates and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, so you run it as a desktop app. And kind of disclaimer here, it definitely is a cartography tool. So there's a bit of a learning curve to it, but you've got a lot of power. This is what the actual studio we use to make our worldwide street level map too. So you can take something like the shapefile format that I mentioned, or GeoJSON, or KML, or some other geo format that's got points or lines or whatever in it, and you can throw these different files into Tomil as layers and then style them kind of like CSS. So if you had that shapefile I was talking about with like the borders of all the states in the US, that's just a bunch of vector paths that are here are the borders of the states. You could throw that in as a layer called states, and then you can style it kind of CSS style and say make the line width 3 pixel gray, and then for states that start with A, fill them in pink or something like that. And then you see that in real time in a map view as you're changing it's called Cardo, but it's the CSS-like stuff. And then when you're done with that, you export that out into this SQLite-based format I mentioned called mbtiles, which is just basically a big SQLite database full of the tile images that you need, and you pick kind of the bounds and the how far you want to zoom and all that kind of stuff. And you can hook that straight into our SDK to then use it as an offline local map. I mean, it's offline capable. You could use it whether you're offline or not. But you could design a custom style for San Francisco for a WWDC app that looks a certain way, and then just export San Francisco, which isn't too big size-wise, file size-wise, and then put that in your app, and then you've got an app that works whether you have internet connection or not that has a custom-looking map of San Francisco. So that's kind of what Tomil lets you do in hand-in-hand with the SDK.
So you're going to make one of those for DubDub for all of us?
I was just thinking. I kind of came up with this off the top of my head, but that sounds like an awesome idea.
Yeah, so this thing looks like it has, a lot of features that, I would not understand how to use right off the bat here, but I mean, it looks like CSS for maps, and actually the little screenshot you have, it looks a lot like CSS.
Yeah, exactly. That was kind of the design inspiration. It's it's definitely a cartography tool. We try to put a lot of documentation and walkthrough guides out on this, and all this stuff works for. I mean, our kind of original ideas for this came from doing web maps. So all this stuff works as a way you could either put it on hosting or host it yourself and embed it in a web page. It's got some features that some folks might never use. And like I said, we use it to build all of our maps. And so back to that eating your own dog food kind of thing, we're always working on it. We're like, oh man, I hit a bug for this, and we fix it. But it's out there as open source too, so people can really hack on it. And you can also see, like, I like to point to it as a way to do this kind of application, like a native Node.js application in a Mac app, it's just cool having the stuff open source like that. We do our tickets and our milestones and kind of our public discussion for features out in the open, which is kind of different from a lot of companies, and it's kind of cool to just, we're talking about an issue internally, and I'm asking some other developers about it, and I'll just point them to the ticket of the feature we're trying to work on.
Right.
It's pretty cool.
Cool. One off-the-wall thought occurred to me. In Tilemill, would you be able to plot a map of, like, the surface of the moon or maybe Mars?
So I don't know the specifics of it because that's kind of beyond my cartographic expertise. But I know people have played around with that. It really kind of depends, I think, on the shape of the planet, because it's slightly different than Earth. I really don't know how that would work, but I think you could do that. I know some people have done things around, say, like a map of the poles, which gets interesting with the type of map projection that we use for all this stuff that everybody uses for this type of map, which is kind of, turning a sphere into a flat surface. You've got some distortion going on.
Right.
So it's especially bad at the poles, so when you want to do a map of the South Pole, it can get kind of crazy. But, I don't know on other planets. Somebody, I think I remember seeing somebody doing some NASA satellite imagery of like the surface of Jupiter and turning that into a map. I don't think it was like planet wide, but they would do like the Jupiter that has the giant volcano that's like 6 times the size of the Earth. They did like a map of that volcano.
Okay.
Yeah. Kind of unreal. I'm sure there's a lot of rabbit holes you could go down with that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it seems like a general purpose kind of tool, and I'm sure somebody would have tried it by now.
Yeah, I've seen people do interesting things, like put their resume in a map. So you're scrolling around. It's not really geographically accurate. It's just a huge tiled version of, you know, all their projects. And as you zoom in a little closer, you get to see more detail some of the projects. We actually did a similar setup to that on our the front page at Development Seed, which is developmentseed.org, where we had a world map, and then it kind of zooms around and shows you different areas of the world that we've done projects with. It was a portfolio in the form of a live map that you could just grab and start playing around with. So people have done some crazy things with that for resumes or games or all kinds of stuff.
Well, that's kind of cool. Oh, it looks like you have a play button there. So does that mean that you can do kind of automated tours and stuff with this as well?
Yeah, on the website, we have an open source JavaScript library called Easy for that. That'll do those nice timing curve transitions like you get with core animation, but it'll do it on the web so you could zoom out and zoom back into another part of the web. I'm working on some neat stuff with that in an open source app called MapPresent. That's an iPad app that does kind of the same kind of thing on the iPad side, where it'll transition between different views of the map, and you can audio narrate along with it and export it out to video. You can do some neat stuff. I want to do more. That's one of the areas I really want to kind of personally play around with, is moving through transitions of maps or doing an animation kind of Indiana Jones style where you're following them around the world. Some cool stuff there.
You get like a little a fade of a plane that looks like a model kind of thing.
Right, yeah, and then like a dotted line and an X marks the spot.
Exactly.
Adventure music.
Dude, I would so pay for that.
Don't know what it does except look cool. But
exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they have in the iPhoto travel slideshow now, don't they?
Oh, yeah, so, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, that's just, you know, all in good fun.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, the stuff is really fun. It's like maps. I'd always have kind of a mild interest in maps and history in particular, but maps, you know, I always thought maps look cool, but I didn't really get into the cartographics of it. And then since I've been doing this stuff, maps are, it's just really fun to play around with this. I get a lot of people who don't necessarily have a map app idea, and they're like, I still want to try your tools. It looks fun.
Yeah. So, what are some of the craziest ideas that you've seen made with Mapbox?
Oh boy. Most people are doing just standard like Earth view maps. There's the Jupiter one that I mentioned. I think some folks have done some stuff with astronomy like that. But most people have got a pretty solid need and are going ahead with, you know, plotting various areas on the planet or showing regions. I mean, I have seen an uptick in interest in games, like location-based games for the iOS stuff, for people doing cool kind of battle things where you go to other cities and kind of duke it out with other players and claim various areas as your turf. That's kind of a neat idea.
So is there like a real life-size Risk game out there?
I haven't seen anything like that. It's interesting because a lot of times if it's not location-based games where it's distinctly tied to the user's location, they'll do a very heavily stylized and not necessarily geographically accurate map. I think that's kind of the way people will go, especially coming from a game perspective. They'll just do custom artwork for a map because it doesn't have to be geographically accurate, whereas our stuff is really geared towards, you know, if you're doing, say, a location-based game or a navigation app or something like that, you really want to know that this is accurate and represents certain distances accurately. And so that's the kind of app you'll tend to find using our tools more often.
So you mentioned history a little bit. I don't know how much you would have to do to support, like, historical images or anything, or historical maps of cities and stuff. I think that would be that'd be even harder to do than what you've already done as it is.
Well, it's actually not too difficult. The trick with some of it is resolution. But like I've seen some examples of people taking a map. I saw this recently. Some folks took a map of Persia, which is modern-day Iran, from like, I don't know, 150 years ago. And if you have an image, like a raster image like that, if you can get it into the right projection, which there's a lot of open source command line tools to do that, it might need a little bit of distorting, but once you have that, you can stick that on a map, and Tom will let you pull those in too. So he took this map of Persia, reprojected it, so it got a little distorted, threw it into Toml as a raster layer, and then you could just stick it on the map and pan around, and it's got all the geographic points, they line up. So then you could start to do some cool things with overlaying a modern-day map or streets or cities over top of a 150-year-old scan of a map. So yeah, it's totally possible. Like, I've been watching some, there's a really cool department at University of Connecticut called MAGIC. I forget what it stands for, Maps and Geographic Information something. But they put out a lot of old historic maps of Connecticut from like the 1600s, and it'd be totally feasible if they're reasonably detailed to take those in, and if you get them in the right projection, to turn them into real working maps and put them in an app.
Oh yeah, that sounds cool. Just to have an overlay, it's kind of like a treasure hunt, or maybe even like a real life history find. Like, hey, this was where this thing happened, and you can go there in real life and see where stuff happened.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen some interesting things, like a contractor was working on an app with this organic farm that does tours and on-site education about farming, and they had like a hand-drawn map of their farm, but it was geographically accurate, and he could pull that into Toml and cut it up and turn it into tiles and make it a native app, where you could show the user's location on a map that somebody drew, not intending to be used on a digital device like that. So it's pretty cool.
Cool. So I think that's most of the questions I've got for you today. Is there a place to get a hold of you for other questions or to talk more about Mapbox?
Yeah, for sure. I'm pretty active on Twitter. That's a good way to reach me. INCANUS77, but also just straight at Mapbox. We have a IRC channel on Freenode, Pound Mapbox, and I'm there all day if you have any tech questions. And talk to a lot of iOS folks in there. Or just email me, justin@mapbox.com.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to me about Mapbox today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Justin Miller for taking the time out of his busy schedule to chat with me about Mapbox. Show notes for this episode and every episode of NS Brief are available on our website, nsbrief.com. If you have any comments, suggestions, or feedback, feel free to send it to us, show@nsbrief.com, or you can send us a note on Twitter. We are @nsbrief. You can also find NS Brief on the iTunes Music Store. Just search for NS Brief and we'll be the first search result there. And while you're there, why don't you post a review? Every new review helps new listeners find the show, and you've been posting some really awesome reviews lately. Thanks. And that'll just about do it for this NS Brief. We'll see you again next time.